Good morning, and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Marisa DeMarco, and today we're talking about breastfeeding in New Mexico. For decades, formula companies pushed the idea that their product was superior to a mother's milk. Lately, though, that trend has changed, and the CDC reports that the number of newborns who start out nursing was at a high 77%, more than three quarters. In 2013, the latest year that info is available. But that number shrinks as the child ages, with fewer and fewer babies breastfeeding at 6 months or a year. So what changes for moms as time passes? Listeners, we want to hear from you. Give us a call at 277-5866 if you're in Albuquerque, or toll free at 877-899-5866. Erin Marshall of the New Mexico Breastfeeding Task Force is joining us this morning to talk about some of these issues. Good morning, Erin.
Good morning.
Erin, what can you tell us about the crucial moments after a baby is born? What should be happening in that moment?
When a baby is born, that is what we call the sacred hour, if you will. And the most beautiful thing that can happen is placing an infant, a newborn infant, skin to skin with its mother and allowing that bonding to happen right away. And there are a lot of physiological reasons, benefits for baby in particular, and also for mom, to placing that infant skin to skin right away. And that baby will, if allowed, to be skin to skin with mom, uninterrupted, crawl and find mom's breast and latch all on its own. And it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. I would say Google baby crawl if you haven't seen it. It's a beautiful, beautiful moment.
So why is breastfeeding so important? Let's start there.
Well, breastfeeding is, it's the first food for an infant. Our bodies as women, as mothers, we've developed this baby, we've nursed this child for 9+ months inside of our bodies, and our bodies are built to nourish the child until that child can start solid food. So really, breast milk is very important for a number of reasons. We see reductions in illnesses such as respiratory illness and diabetes and eventually obesity and some other diarrheal illnesses. But also, it also has immunization. It allows the baby protections against certain diseases that's shared from mom, so that they have a bolstered immune system. And there are benefits for mom as well. There are reductions in certain types of cancers, like breast and ovarian cancers, and heart disease and type 2 diabetes for mom as well.
Now, we're going to talk about baby-friendly hospitals. And when I first heard this term, I was like, aren't all hospitals baby-friendly? What makes a hospital baby-friendly?
So that's a very specific designation. It's based on a global initiative out of the World Health Organization and UNICEF. And what it means is that a hospital is committed to a certain set of practices and optimal care in order to receive this designation from an organization called Baby Friendly USA, with which we are not affiliated. And they must adhere to the 10 steps. So there are specific practices that a hospital has to put in place. It takes a hospital typically 3 to 5 years to go on what we call the pathway to designation.
All right. Gila Regional Medical Center down in Silver City just got this designation, and we have Mary Gruska, a lactation consultant there, here to talk about it. Hello, Mary. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you just fine. Good morning.
Good morning. So tell me, what did it take for Gila Regional Medical Center to get that designation?
It really is a significant process, a significant shift in culture for certainly our hospital community, I'd say for our community as a whole, in putting in practice those steps that Erin just mentioned. A total rethinking in terms of what we were doing with how we feed infants and how we care for new families. We in hospitals had developed certain ways of doing things that we were perhaps a bit attached to, but the baby-friendly process really showed us that those processes weren't based in science and or research, and so really required some rethinking in how we were delivering care.
So did it require kind of a shift in the hospital's culture?
Absolutely, absolutely. Really rethinking the priority that we placed on things like the initial breastfeeding versus the tasks that we might need to accomplish, rethinking where care is delivered and how care is delivered, that care happening in a separate nursery with the baby in one place and the mother in a separate place versus now that care happening with the family as a whole. I know it's been uncomfortable at times. It requires, I would say, even better assessment skills of nursing staff. So I really give our nursing staff a lot of credit for this change process.
And another thing that happens, right, is that you have to stop advertising formula in the hospital. Is that correct?
Correct. You have to stop promoting formula. And so that was a difficult piece. There are a lot of emotions attached, I think, to how we feed babies. And there are some who were worried that we weren't going to provide any support for those families who needed to or formula feed or chose to formula feed. And that's not the case with this designation at all. We've actually improved the way we deliver that care as well. But no, we promote breastfeeding because we're a healthcare institution and we promote health.
Now, don't the hospitals also have to forego free samples of formula?
Correct. We purchase formula. At Gila Regional, we actually had not been distributing free formula gift packs for quite some time, but now even the formula that we use within the hospital, we buy. We don't receive for free.
Now, Erin, can you tell me, is that sometimes a hard sell for hospitals that they're going to have to start spending money on something that they used to get for free?
You know, that's interesting. That does seem to be one of the challenges that we see when hospitals are considering going on the pathway to designation as a baby-friendly hospital. However, what the actuality is over time, because formula use does diminish because as more moms choose to breastfeed, especially exclusively, your formula use is going to go down. And so formula basically becomes used almost like a medicine where it's needed. And thank goodness we have it for when it is needed. But the actual cost then typically we don't see that as a barrier in reality.
Now, is one of the concerns, too, sometimes that in other hospitals, formula might be given to babies before a mother has really had time to think about it and to give consent for that to happen?
Unfortunately, that does still happen sometimes, and that's what we're committed to do, is to ensure that all families are supported and have access and are able to reach their breastfeeding goals. Very important, critical to our mission. And so that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to really get out there and help educate. We provide education to the hospitals. We connect hospital staffs with education for their nursing staff. We provide it for their physicians. We are really dedicated to really helping bridge that.
Now, does the introduction of formula sometimes interfere with breastfeeding? Is that the concern?
Not only does it interfere with breastfeeding, and we see a multitude of challenges along those lines, but really even just a tiny bit of formula can change the flora in the baby's gut and the development of the gut and the digestive tract. So it really does have significant impact. So if a mom is choosing to exclusively breastfeed, if that is the family's desire, then having somebody even supplement just an ounce can make a difference in how that child, how their gut develops. So we really want to respect that and respect our family's choices.
And how many hospitals in New Mexico are considered baby-friendly?
We have 8 right now that have achieved designation. We have 30 hospitals across the state that do have maternity care facilities. So we're working with all 30, or we've reached out to all 30. We're really concentrating on about 12 hospitals that are committed to the pathway, in addition to the 8 that have achieved designation.
All right. Well, parents out there, join the conversation. Were you or your partner able to breastfeed as long as you wanted to? Or maybe you're an employer who supports new moms and their breastfeeding efforts. We want to hear from you. You can give us a call at 277-5866 if you're in Albuquerque, or toll free at 877-899-5866. Now, Lisa Knudsen joins us today. She's a health communication PhD student at UNM and a mother advocate. So tell us about the law that you helped create a couple of years ago about pumping breast milk at work.
In 2007, I had just started the PhD program in the Communication and Journalism Department, and I was a teaching assistant, and my daughter was 6 months old. And I came in, and though my program was very supportive, they didn't really understand. They weren't used to having PhD students try to do this whole both thing. You can be a mother and a student, and, you know, hopefully one day become a professor. And so it was a bit of an ordeal. They had, you know, there was some barriers I had to overcome. They originally wanted me to go to an old restroom in order to pump, and that was uncomfortable and unsanitary. And one day, the person who was allowed to let me into the space, she wasn't available, and I wasn't allowed to pump. And I was devastated because I thought this was going to make my milk supply go down, and I wasn't going to be able to provide for my daughter. And so, you know, initially I cried, and then I sort of dug deep into myself, and I was like, this isn't right. We've got to do something about this. So I looked around the country, and I saw that there were other states that had laws. And so basically I modeled after a couple of those laws, and I wrote a letter to the editor that was printed in the Daily Lobo. And that letter was then read by some pediatricians over at UNMH who were a member of actually Erin's organization, the New Mexico Breastfeeding Task Force. And so they contacted me and they said, you know, we'd really like to help you. And momentum grew, and I was introduced to then Representative Danis Picaro and an amazing advocate named Angie Baccio, who worked for PB&J, and all of the connections that they had across the community, we were able to draft this law that then sailed through the legislature, which is unheard of, and it was passed in both sides. And at the time, Governor Richardson, as the story goes, is he was interested in improving his sort of pro-woman, democratic, progressive credibility because he was thinking about running for office, for higher office, obviously. Mm-hmm. And so he called, you know, down to the Department of Health and said, hey, do you support this bill? And they gave it the thumbs up, and it was signed into law.
So what does it do? It makes it so that an employer has to provide a clean space that's not a bathroom.
Exactly.
Is that right?
Yes, there's two components. It has to be a clean space that's not a bathroom. And actually, the federal law, which was then passed in 2010, improves on that to say that it needs to be a place where it's free from intrusion, so somebody's not going to accidentally just walk in on you, and that it is secluded, where people can't see. So you can't be in a room that's like full of glass windows where somebody could walk by. And then the other piece has to do with flexible break times. For those of us that are paid hourly, our employers need to understand that we need to be able to pump whenever, you know, we need to. And that means that they can allow us to work after our normal 8-hour day and not have to pay us overtime, so that we can still get our full paycheck, we can still do our full job, but we can also be able to pump and provide that milk to our child.
So let's talk a little bit, especially for all the non-moms. Why is being able to pump whenever you need to pump, why is that important to maintaining your milk supply?
It's a supply and demand system, right? So if a baby is there to drink from you, then you produce more milk. It's why moms who have twins have no problem producing enough milk, because as there's more demand, more milk is produced. But as the baby starts to sort of wean off and eat other foods, then your milk supply goes down, and that's the normal process. It's also why it's so important to do skin-to-skin, like Erin mentioned, and what Mary Gruska mentioned in the hospital, right? Because when you have those babies demanding the milk initially, then the milk comes in. It's all about supply and demand.
So does everyone know about this law? Listeners, have you been able to tell your employer, hey, I need a clean, private, non-bathroom space and flexible break time so I can pump breast milk for my baby? Or maybe you're an employer who's ahead of the curve on this. Call now and tell us about it. 505-277-5866 or toll free 877-899-5866. You can also post to our Facebook page. Find us on Facebook at KUNM Radio. Lissa, do you think that there's still a barrier to breastfeeding with regards to moms going to workplaces and not being supported, or moms going to school and not being able to get access to what this law provides?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, it's one piece to have a law, but it's quite another to negotiate with your employer to follow the law, right? When you're in a situation where you know you need this income, and your employer may be like, yeah, law, but, you know, what teeth is there? You know, what's the consequence if I don't follow this law? It's a really difficult spot for a mother to be placed in, to have to negotiate on her own behalf and her child's behalf when she's just grateful for having a job. Right? I mean, and it's just, it's so much pressure, especially since we already know that even getting hired as a mother is an accomplishment, right? Mothers get paid less than single women, and single women get paid less than men. So the fact that she was even hired puts her in a position where she's already likely to be doubting herself and not have the courage to be able to say, hey, did you know that this is a law and you should support me in this?
All right. Well, we're talking about breastfeeding in New Mexico today. This is the KUNM Call-In Show, and I'm your host, Marisa DeMarco, with KUNM's Public Health New Mexico Project. We're going to take a quick break.
Next time on Peace Talks Radio, Dr. Hallett, where do you see the progress of peace studies at this point in history?
Paul, it's there. How influential it is another question. There's so many other competing interests that it hasn't really risen to have a very strong foothold within the American consciousness.
That's next time on Peace Talks Radio, the series on peacemaking and nonviolent conflict resolution, Friday morning at 8 on KUNM.
Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hi, I'm Patrick Miller. I'm the author of Living with Miracles. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about Living with Miracles, a common sense guide to A Course in Miracles.
Saturday mornings at 6 on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Marisa DeMarco. Erin Marshall of the New Mexico Breastfeeding Task Force is here with us today. We also have Lissa Knudsen. I'm going to get that right. No, close. With us this morning, and she's a communication PhD student and a mother advocate. We're here talking about breastfeeding in New Mexico, about the resurgence of support for nursing babies and the hurdles that remain for moms. We're about to talk to Erin Adair Hodges, a mom and English instructor at UNM, at CNM, excuse me. Good morning, Erin. Are you with us?
Hi, Marisa.
Hi. Erin, what can you tell us about some of the barriers to breastfeeding in your experience?
Sure. Well, first I want to say that I really appreciate and value the work of women like Erin Marshall and Lisa in supporting and emphasizing the importance of breastfeeding. I breastfed myself, but the experience actually highlighted for me how incredibly difficult it is for some women, and that there can be pressure for women to do it past the point of it being emotionally and physically healthy for themselves. And for me, I see breastfeeding advocacy as necessarily being tied to the status of, or lack of status of paid family leave in our country. And so we have women who have to go back to work far before they've established breastfeeding with their child, and then trying to balance that with maintaining a career. So even with pumping, it becomes difficult to the point where I think it's important to support women who look at their choices and decide that for them, breastfeeding is not going to work as much as they wanted to do it.
So, Erin, what kind of policy changes would you like to see to support new moms?
Well, what I'd like to see is America join the rest of the world and have paid family leave. I think that's probably not in our immediate future, but I do think even President Obama recently heralded that as a worthwhile goal. It's the United States of America and Papua New Guinea. We are the only countries in the world that don't have paid family leave. FMLA does not count. And for me, I went back to work shockingly soon after having a baby. And my baby was born 3 weeks early, did not do the baby crawl, did not want the breast, did not latch. And yet I persevered. I persevered, did not sleep. I pumped when he was sleeping. So I did not sleep when he was sleeping. I worked or pumped. And I kept doing it because I felt that it would be best. But at the same time, the level of stress made it very difficult to bond with my child. And in retrospect, I really wish that I would have maybe gone to bringing in formula earlier, just to have some time to sleep and for self-care. And I think that we're talking about the health of children, which of course is of paramount importance, but the health of the mother has to be considered. And that sometimes, you know, non-ideal choices have to be made, but women should not be made to feel guilty because, you know, it didn't work out for them. They're still, if they are educated about their choices and they're making concerned decisions, they're going to have happy, healthy babies.
Erin, you said you had to go back to work really soon after your child was born. What is the law around this? And does anybody know, like, is there a certain amount of time that you're supposed to be able to have for maternity leave? Does anyone know the rules on that?
So I can talk a little bit about this and then maybe throw it to someone else. So it varies. There's no such thing as paid maternity leave. FMLA provides for up to 12 weeks of unpaid leave, but yet only if you have been in that position full-time for at least a year. So if you, say, went from part-time, even if you're part-time for 10 years and you went to full-time, you wouldn't qualify. And in order to actually get it paid during that time, you have to have saved up enough sick leave. And so for me, for example, I'm going on, I think, you know, almost eight years at my institution almost, and I'm just hitting 12 weeks of sick leave. So the idea that this is just something that working women will have a bank of, especially if you're younger, which most of the times you are if you're having a child, you don't have that to draw from.
Right. Okay, well, thanks so much for being with us here this morning, Erin. We're going to take a call from Melissa in Rio Rancho. Melissa, hey. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
What's your comment this morning for us?
Well, I delivered at the Presbyterian Hospital downtown, and I don't actually know if that's considered a baby-friendly hospital.
Uh-oh. Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah, I
great.
I still hear you. I'm not sure what that was.
I don't know either. So you're not sure if Presbyterian was considered a baby-friendly hospital?
Right, and I'm actually curious about the answer to that. But also, I just felt like I had a really hard time getting the hang of breastfeeding, which wasn't helped by the fact that there was somebody in my room checking my vitals or my baby's vitals about once an hour, all day and all night. So I really didn't get any sleep. And they had lactation consultants in my room all the time, which seems like it should have been a help, but actually I felt like they were a hindrance and that they were, you know, they all contradicted each other, and they really pushed that nipple shield and supplemental formula super soon when that was a time frame where the baby really should have been learning how to latch on the breast itself.
Sure. So actually, and I've heard this from a lot of my mom friends, that breastfeeding is not always the easiest thing in the world. Maybe can you speak to that a little bit, Erin?
Sure. So I will say, first of all, Presbyterian Hospital in Albuquerque is baby-friendly designated, but they only achieved that recently. So I know for myself, I gave birth there 19 months ago because my little guy's 19 months old. And I hear you totally on the interruptions and the challenges with staff coming in. And I honestly, you know, I could not myself wait to get out of there fast enough to get home and actually bond with my baby. So I hear you in saying that. And that's something that I think that with the baby-friendly process that we're really working is to educate the staff so that all of those staff are being consistent in their messaging. That's part of becoming baby-friendly. So again, Presbyterian just was designated recently. So they faced a lot of addressing those inconsistencies in their staff messaging and the education that they were giving to patients. And they've really stepped up their game. So that is part of the benefit of becoming baby-friendly designated, is hopefully to iron out some of those inconsistencies and really provide that support. Because I will tell you, with my first child, who's now 4 and a half, we faced every challenge imaginable trying to breastfeed. It is not, you would think this is such a normal thing and the baby crawl videos look so great and I do like them, but we didn't do that. I had an emergency C-section my first time around, and we had every challenge in the book trying to, you know, breastfeed. And if you don't have that support and those consistent messages, it's a real challenge, which is one of the reasons for the baby-friendly designation.
All right, we're going to take a call from Katie in Albuquerque. Good morning, Katie. Katie, can you hear me? No, Dice. Okay. Jessica Ellis is the creator of Nourish the Dream Breastfeeding Support Community for Black Mamas. Thanks for joining us this morning, Jessica. What are you thinking about as we're talking about this hospital interaction?
What I'm thinking about is it's sad that really breastfeeding is the first thing that an infant learns. So the push and the rush for something, you know, that's really what breastfeeding is when it comes to the very, you know, after they come out, when it comes to the very first thing that mommy and baby do together, it's about how do I nourish and where do I get it from? And it's so much more than a latch, you know, and it's just about mothers to know that it's all, you're both learning, the mama and the baby. And I just wish I heard the word baby more. Because at the end of the day, it's about nourishing the baby. And that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking as a black mama, I know I was blessed to have a good experience having a baby in the hospital. But I also had my team around me. You know, I brought my team into the hospital with me. And that is not available to lots of women of color, you know, to have support, to tell people, okay, you've been in my room enough. You know, to tell people, you know, no, give my body a chance to figure out what it's supposed to be doing, you know. So there is a lot of trauma going on, I guess, with many mothers, especially women of black mamas, with just the birth process and the beginning part of breastfeeding. It's a beautiful thing. And if, you know, hospitals and the institutions focus more on getting a healthy, happy, and making that moment where a woman knows the power of her body, which can birth a child and feed a child, special, that's when the connection starts. You know, and I've been here, I don't know anything about a pump. I represent a black woman that does anything to grow her child from her body, you know, so, and that's hard. So I think it's really cool that we're fighting for rooms for people to work in. But there's lots of black moms out there that's fighting to have a roof over their head because they're putting growing their child first.
Well, and let's talk about this. What are some of the other disparities for women of color when it comes to breastfeeding?
It just starts with the history of it. You know, one of the disparities is most women of color, they're not, when the baby comes into the world, it's stress. You know, it starts out knowing that our life matters from the conception. You know, through pregnancy, you struggle, there's barriers. You know what I'm saying? Then through birth, with interventions, there's barriers. And by the time you get to breastfeeding, it's like, what can I do right? It's, you know, so it has a lot to do with economical and support and culture. Because in black culture, it's about, you know, put your baby down so you can go take care of somebody else's baby. You know, and that's, we have the lowest breastfeeding rate because of the history, but at the same time, we were the most influenced about being wet nurses and feeding other people's babies. But now, we can't even feed our own, you know. So besides being a black single mama, I'm a black single homeless mama, you know. Because just the fact of it's a full-time job to grow a child, and for people to make it seem like, oh, it's just pumping some milk, or it's not. You know what I'm saying? Our bodies grow human beings. Breastfeeding is about growing a human being. And I'm still growing a three-year-old, and sometimes that takes most of the day, you know.
So do you think that low-income households face different set of challenges too?
I know. I don't think it. I know. This country knows it. You know, poverty is real. And it was really sad that we basically, as black breastfeeding mamas, we have to go into poverty to be able to grow our child because there's no support from the state. There's no support from this country. And the welfare system somehow has forgot we're human beings. And they're not providing what we need to even sustain as a people, as a person. So it's the state of a black parent is ugly, you know. And it's just about, can we, as black people, from the beginning of our children's lives, be able to tell them that their lives matter. You know what I'm saying? Black lives matter from the time that they come on this earth. And that means being able to nourish them and feed them. You know, so it's really about women knowing the power of their body, and no matter what the disparities are, that they could still nourish their kid. You know, because we'll be here all day talking about disparities. You know, but we could start with it'd be nice to be able to have a roof over your head while you're feeding your kid. You know?
All right. Well, give us a call, everyone. The phone number then, again, is 277-5866 in Albuquerque, or toll-free long distance 877-899-5866. You can find us on Facebook and post comments there. We're KUNM Radio, or tweet at KUNM News. Have you ever been made to feel bad for breastfeeding your baby in public? What do you do? Call or write, please, and let us know. We also have a Facebook comment from Gloria. She says she breastfed freely around and about New Mexico and was encouraged by Loveless Milk midwives. La Leche League was a group that supported her, and she says it's unfortunate that hospitals did not continue to evolve. We have a call too from Kristen in Santa Fe. Kristen, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, what are you thinking about this morning?
Well, I wanted to share my story. I did ask your crew if it would be wise, so I'm going to go ahead and say it anyway. So my son is now 11 years old, and he was born in the Taos Hospital. I had a very fortunate and unusual situation where I ended up in an emergency C-section with him. He was my second child, and my first birth was totally without drugs, without intervention, so it was sort of a shock. But normally they let one person into the operating room with you, but a concession was made, and my midwife was allowed in as well as my husband. And the gist of the whole thing is that I nursed my son while they were sewing me up.
Wow.
So skin-to-skin nursing is entirely possible, even in a C-section.
I just wanted to say that I think that's exactly how it's supposed to be. And I'm so proud of Taos Hospital for being able to understand that. You know, we've had a lot of barriers where sometimes, you know, trying to re-educate some of the providers that skin-to-skin matters. You know, they think of it as this, oh, it's sort of a choice that's sort of fluffy and it won't have that much significant difference, you know, make that much significant difference in the long run. But to recognize the power of that bond and of, you know, how important that's going to be to your health and to your child's health, and for them to make that a priority, that's amazing. They deserve a lot of credit for that.
Great. Thank you very much for sharing your story with us this morning, Kristen. Yeah.
You're welcome.
And one of the things that I really wanted to touch on, Jessica, is you've been an advocate for allowing new mothers who are behind bars to pump breast milk so it can be given to their babies. So let's talk a little bit about that. Why does that initiative matter?
Because 25% of incarcerated women are either pregnant or have had a baby within a year of being arrested. And women have sets at any time and place. And when you're picked up and arrested in a country where that can happen any time, especially if you're black, you're always up to be arrested. And they don't provide the contraception that's needed. You know, when you're taken away from your life out of nowhere and you're incarcerated, your body changes, you know. And there are mamas and pregnant women that are being arrested unjustly or just from the survival of life, you know, in the criminal justice system. When it comes to reforming, it has to talk about life, you know, just because you lose your civil rights, and you're still human rights. And no matter what, the God-given right to be a mother shouldn't be up to the criminal justice system to take from you. You know, I would be glad when they start sentencing women for the responsibility to be a mother. You know, how about we stop taking mothers away from their child to pay society or pay off some prison, you know, bills, and start building some places where families can, because either way, families do time together. So if families are going to do time together, let's grow together and rebuild, you know, rehabilitate together. So it's big, because no matter what, baby didn't commit crime. You know what I'm saying? It's about the baby. You know, we can't, it's about babies getting human milk that were made for them. My breast milk is made for my son, you know?
And women are actually the fastest growing prison population in New Mexico, too. So it's the rate of the population that is being incarcerated more and more frequently as time goes on. So that's an increasing problem.
Yeah, I actually want to give a shout out to MDC here in Bernalillo County, because they're in the process of, they've drafted a policy to allow mothers that are separated from their babies due to incarceration to be able to maintain their milk supply, so that they're going to allow them to have pumps and have that milk then taken by some volunteers to their offsite child, so that their baby can still get that nourishment while they're separated.
And it was a law that was carried in the most recent legislative session, but I don't think it made it through, so that would be a statewide initiative. So we're talking about breastfeeding today. This is the KUNM Call-In Show, and I'm Marisa DeMarco. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Skip the hassle of finding a buyer for that old vehicle, especially if it's going to cost a lot to get it ready to sell. If you have anything with an engine, we'll spare you the hassle and expense. Plus, you'll get a tax deduction, a KUNM membership, and you'll feel so good knowing that your donation is helping to keep this program on the air. It's so easy. Call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
This week in This American Life.
I walk around constantly just thinking about all the things that happened, okay? Constantly. It's on my mind. Every day. Every day.
Chances are it has not been on your mind, even though I would bet that the thing that he's talking about is something that you have heard of and you know about. What he's been thinking about this that you might be glad to be thinking also this week.
Sunday afternoons at 4 on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Marisa DeMarco, and we're talking about breastfeeding in New Mexico. I want to take a call from Glenn in Jemez Springs. Glenn, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having this. I've been wondering, as I've been listening, why is it our country is so resistant to women publicly breastfeeding, pumping, the whole thing? I think it's a Puritan ethic that goes way back that somehow got stuck. I was in Thailand, in Guatemala this year, last year, and women are out there publicly breastfeeding. I was fortunate enough when my former wife had a job at St. Joe's Hospital in Albuquerque in 1987 to be able to take my newborn son to a chaplain's little dining room, and she would pump and we'd have lunch, and then I'd take the milk back home. And as a father, taking that bottle and giving it to my son, you know, it's kind of the closest the man can get to breastfeeding. And the bonding, the great feeling, the tenderness in a son who, you know, is very close to me yet today. So I encourage men out there to get with it, and for the whole society to get this Puritan ethic thing out of the way and open up the doors.
All right. Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about breastfeeding in public. First of all, what are some of the problems that moms encounter when they're breastfeeding in public?
Well, we see a lot of people who will ask women to cover up is most common. Ask women to actually leave sometimes, but more and more, I think it's becoming acceptable in New Mexico in particular. I know in other parts of the country, maybe not so much. And some places, they're even, more tolerant than we are here in New Mexico. But I have seen and heard from a lot of mothers here in New Mexico that New Mexico is better than a lot of places across the nation. And I do want to give a quick shout out to the caller who just called in. My husband is a stay-at-home dad with both of our little guys. And that is a beautiful, beautiful thing. To see men get involved. So,
okay. Listeners, we want to hear from you today, too. Are the women in your life able to breastfeed their babies for as long as they want? What are some of the circumstances that get in their way? And were you ever made to feel shame, or did you ever experience judgment for breastfeeding in public? Jessica, I'll kick this one to you.
I would say that I do feel, well, I've learned, because I've done a lot of traveling breastfeeding, that New Mexico is a front runner on supporting breastfeeding in public, because when I first found out it was a problem, I'm just really blessed that I had the education and the strength and who I was as a mother to deal with it. And I just think it's the sexualization that's happened to this, to the woman's body at all this time. And it's just somehow in the history books or science, people weren't taught what the purpose of the woman's breast is for, evidently, because that's about the only reason I could see where somebody would have a problem of a woman using a part of her body, you know, to do what it was made for. So it's sad, and women are getting accosted all over this country, but there is, for those women who have been a victim of that, know that your story needs to be heard, and there is support out there on Twitter, and we will contact these companies and push the right kind of training, because, like I say, you know, mothers are the gatekeeper of the future. Until we start taking care of our mothers and honoring their lives and their body they put on the, on this earth to keep it growing, it's when we'll get somewhere. But it's hard, and it sucks, and I tell women to keep breastfeeding no matter what and know their loss. And you can't be worried about somebody else. It's about you and baby, and feed your child no matter what.
All right, we're going to take a call from Sarah in Santa Fe. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning. I just needed to call in. I'm actually the director for the New Mexico WIC program, and I'm supporting everything you're saying, and I'm so glad you're bringing this attention to the public. Just real quickly for your guest today, I just wanted to make sure she knew that WIC is out there, and we provide food, breast pump support, nutrition education to postpartum moms and children up to 5. And not only that, last year we reached or we exceeded by 79.2% the initiation breastfeeding rate for the state. We're one of the ones that lead the nation. And we couldn't do more to support breastfeeding and our mothers. There's actually also been a law passed, breastfeeding at work, and then license to breastfeed in public. So I just want to make sure you're aware of that. And however we can help educate, we would love to partner with you.
Sarah, tell me about the law about breastfeeding in public.
Yes, so it's called License to Breastfeed, and it's the law, NMSA from 1978, section 28-20-1, and it can be found on the breastfeedingnewmexico.org breastfeeding site, and then also on our nmwic.org as well.
So basically, there's a law that makes it so mothers can breastfeed in public. Is that
absolutely? And then also breastfeeding at work.
Erin, what's...
Yeah, I want to say that's correct. We actually, this is from the New Mexico Breastfeeding Task Force, we have wallet cards that we have printed in English and Spanish that have both the law for public breastfeeding and the law about the, you know, employment printed on you so that you can have them. So if somebody needs that, we have wallet cards, and that way, you know, if somebody confronts you, you can pull those out. We also on our website at breastfeedingnewmexico.org have... legal. So if somebody's being challenged in such a respect, we have legal assistance arranged through the University of New Mexico. And I also just want to say WIC is one of our biggest partners. We work, you know, lockstep with WIC. They are wonderful providing services. We still feel like, you know, that we know from talking with some mamas that we still have work to do in reaching everybody, but WIC is wonderful. So thank you for calling in.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Oh, sorry. Absolutely. And not only that, we serve and see half of the infants born in the state. So, yeah, the Breastfeeding Task Force has been a huge partnership. And if there's anything that we can ever do, we can all be reached at nmwic.org. So thank you for bringing this attention to the public.
All right. Well, give us a call this morning, 277-5866 in Albuquerque, or toll-free long distance, 1-877-899-5866. We're about to talk with Monica Esparza, breastfeeding peer counselor with WIC. Good morning, Monica.
Good morning.
First of all, why do moms need to breastfeed while they're out and about in public sometimes? Let's talk basics for those of us who are non-mothers.
Well, mothers need to breastfeed in public just like they need to breastfeed at home. It is a way that they are nourishing their babies. We've talked, they talked about supply and demand and how it is important for that demand to be continuous, especially in the early months of baby's life. And so as mom and baby are together at and about, when baby's hungry, baby needs to eat.
And what can you tell us about the social acceptance of breastfeeding in public?
We have come a long way, but there is still so much to do. I believe that, like everybody has mentioned, New Mexico seems to be becoming more acceptable with seeing breastfeeding mothers out in public. But, however, there is still a lot of moms that get accosted or moms that get told they can't breastfeed in certain places. And so there still needs to be a lot more awareness for everyone to do. And for the advocates out there or the breastfeeding supporters, when you see a mom out there and she is breastfeeding her baby, give her a smile. Tell her thank you for breastfeeding. That does so much to lift the spirits of a mom who can be a little bit self-conscious about breastfeeding in public.
Now, Monica, is that stuff changing a little bit? Are businesses becoming more openly friendly to breastfeeding moms?
I believe so. I believe that there is more awareness, that we are taking big steps as far as letting people know about the law. There are more businesses that are signing up and putting up a sticker that it's the New Mexico Breastfeeding Task Force sticker, so that patrons that come in can know that they're not going to be accosted, they're not going to be pushed aside, that they are welcome to come and breastfeed. So there is more businesses that are being aware of how important it is to support both moms and employees.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time this morning. Jessica, did you want to jump in?
Yeah, I think it's also important as we've been successful in getting these breastfeeding laws, it's going to have to come to a point where we can start holding accountability, because having laws and picking and choosing who and what's going to deal with the consequences for breaking these laws, especially with mass incarceration, there's no issue that they don't have a problem taking people to jail. So people who are breaking these laws and against mothers and against infants, because they're really hurting the baby more than us, where's the accountability in that? So I think as this country is learning to advocate for self, period, the reason it's changing is because we're like, you know what, that's not cool. And it's not okay. And why this is passionate for me as a black mom is because what we have to understand, there's a black disparity where there's black moms that really can't even breastfeed at home or whoever they're staying with. And breastfeeding in public is more safer than breastfeeding in their environment. You know, me and King's travels and trying to do no matter what to breastfeed, I went to visit my family in the South. And I went to trainings about African-American disparity, but I didn't think I understood what the word was until I was carrying my son out in the sun in the black church parking lot looking for somewhere to feed because they didn't want me to breastfeed my child. You know, and I ended up this lady comes up to me and says, you want to smoke, you want to drink? Because the car smelled like, you know, smoke and liquor. But I appreciated her opening up her car for me. And I felt, that's the first time I felt disparity because I had that moment of, oh my God, where am I going to feed my kid? But then it came back to my senses. I'm going to do it right here, right now, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I went back in there and I found the first lady. And it ended up, the pastor went and found me a chair in the corner to breastfeed in, because you cannot tell me people of God have a problem with breastfeeding. You know, so it is hard. Breastfeeding in public is important. It's just for people to understand it's not about them, it's about babies, and it's about growing human beings, period. I just think this country needs to realize we are human. You know, you don't have lives. You know, we all breathe. You know, we all have heartbeats. Those are human functions, and that's what breastfeeding's about.
All right, we're going to take a call from Sophie in Albuquerque. Sophie, good morning.
Good morning.
What are you thinking about this morning, Sophie?
Well, I just wanted to call in and comment and applaud all of your guests and callers for appreciating this topic. I really just wanted to say I'm a doctor here in town, and I'm an OBGYN, and I work at a baby-friendly hospital. I won't say which one it is, but I just wanted to say that the baby-friendly initiative has been really, really instrumental in changing the culture at my hospital, and having been there before and after, I think there are huge strides that were made in doing that at our hospital. And I really wanted to encourage other doctors in our community to to step up and kind of get on board with a baby-friendly initiative, and because it's just so hugely important. It makes our patients happy. It makes our babies healthy, and I think it's just a wonderful, wonderful program. I also wanted to just comment on your last speaker. I did my training in the South, and I know how difficult it is to you know, engage in a cultural shift in certain places in the country to make breastfeeding more acceptable. And I think that New Mexico, I just want to applaud, you know, all of our advocates here, because New Mexico tends to be a fairly breastfeeding-friendly place, but we still have a lot of work to do so that moms do feel really safe, you know, throughout the country, but also here in our state, so that they feel safe breastfeeding in public, but also and in their workplace. And I think as doctors, if we can get on board and mention how important that is to our moms and babies and our patients, I think that can make some really important strides in the right direction.
All right. Well, thanks for calling in, Sophie. As we near the end of today's program, Erin Marshall, what do you think are the next steps for New Mexico when it comes to supporting breastfeeding?
Well, we know that we're doing well in some areas, and we have a lot of momentum around the baby-friendly hospital initiative, around supporting work sites, and also in the, you know, supporting mothers in public with breastfeeding. I think what we need to do is continue that and not to rest on our laurels. We need to continue moving forward, continuing engaging people in these conversations. I think that the doctor who just called in is absolutely right in that we need our medical professionals really on board and talking with their patients and the patients' families. And I shouldn't call them patients, but they're people. But that they're talking with these people, with their mamas and the families, and really lending their support to the goals of the family around breastfeeding. Working with those employers, we have a worksite toolkit available. We also have worksite liaisons through the New Mexico Breastfeeding Task Force, who will actually work with employers. So that's a huge initiative of ours. So if you have employment issues around breastfeeding, contact us. We are here to help. And of course, if you have any issues with breastfeeding in public, we will do legal referrals. So, you know, I definitely encourage everybody to visit us online at breastfeedingnewmexico.org or find us on Facebook.
All right. Well, thanks so much. I want to point people to our website where you can find links to all of these organizations and other stories that we've done about breastfeeding in New Mexico. Thanks for joining us today on the KUNM Call-In Show. Our guests today were Mary Gruska, Erin Ajayar-Hodges, Lissa Knudsen, Monica Esparza. Thanks to all of those folks for being with us. Erin Marshall of the New Mexico Breastfeeding Task Force and Jessica Ellis, creator of Nourish the Dream Breastfeeding Support Community for Black Mamas. Thanks to you all. If you missed any of our program, or if you'd like to share it with friends, the audio of this show will be posted to our website, kunm.org, where you can also find previous call-in shows. Thanks to Jefferson White, our engineer today, Michael Hess, screened your calls, Kaveh Movahed assisted with production, and Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. KUNM's Public Health New Mexico Project is funded by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation.